I didn't understand a lot about myself, but what I identified is that the parts that I didn't understand had to do with my own culture and community. Like, I spent so much of my life repressing or pushing away my identity in order to fit somebody else's expectations, whether it's my family's or greater societal expectations of what it means to be Asian American. And it really affected my mental health. And throughout college, I struggled a lot. I had traumatic things happen, and those things sort of sent me into this intense mental health care. But I realized in that journey, like even before that, I had a lot of...
This is Yellow Chair Collective, the podcast, season 5, episode number 4, starring Carrie Zhang, founder of Asian Mental Health Project. I always like to start out podcast episodes acknowledging the reason why you're here. And so, Carrie, the reason why I loved having you on here is I've been witness to a lot of the events that you've hosted, and there's never been one bad event I've gone to. Like, for I always seem to connect with one person. There's always like a true essence and heart behind why you do what you do. So for people that don't know what Asian Mental Health Project is, can you give an overview of how that started for you, how you even had the idea to found the nonprofit? And so give people an overview.
Yeah, thank you. That's such a great question. And okay, well, I'll give you a brief of what Asian Mental Health Project is. We are a nonprofit, and what we do is our mission is to educate and empower Pan-Asian communities in making mental health care more accessible or mental health topic more approachable. However, I've been really breaking down what this means to me, and especially the word like empowering, because I think that could be such a bit of a buzzword without a lot of context to it. To give some tools and resources to be able to go do something. And that makes me reflect on my own journey of, I started Asian Mental Health Project years ago, around 4 years ago, I would say, is when the first initial idea popped up.
How old were you?
5. I was, oh my God, how old? Like 22? 21.
Girl, this is what I'm interested in. Because most people that are 21 or 22 don't start a nonprofit. Maybe I'm wrong, but I really do believe that like that's 0.5% of the population of all 21-year-olds, let alone all Asian American 21-year-olds who just want to make their parents proud. So how did that idea manifest itself into reality? Because a lot of people dream about one day creating a nonprofit. And for you, like, how did that lead to a consistent action over the course of 4 years where you're now making impact in the LA community?
Yeah, thank you. That's such a thoughtful question. When I started it, when I was like 21, 22, I would say is when things started. And I was like, let me just put some pieces together. I graduated college, it's a year out. And the reason why I started it is because I was feeling lonely and also just not, I didn't understand a lot about myself, but what I identified is that the parts that I didn't understand had to do with my own culture and community. Like, I spent so much of my life repressing or pushing away my identity in order to fit somebody else's expectations, whether it's my family's or greater societal expectations of what it means to be Asian American. And it really affected my mental health. And throughout college, I struggled a lot. I had traumatic things happen, and those things sent me into this intense mental health care. But I realized in that journey, like even before that, I had a lot of issues with anxiety and depression and things like that. I just didn't really know how to name it because I didn't have the tools and I didn't feel empowered. I didn't know what to name the feelings that were going on around me. But I had identified that maybe it had to do with the stigma, or maybe because I wasn't allowed to talk about my feelings in my own household, or maybe it's because none of us did. With that journey, I wanted to start like a multimedia project of, hey, like maybe this will help me connect with like one other person that's going through the same thing. I always know when you connect with one person, it opens the opportunity to connect with a lot of other folks, and we're such social creatures that it's so important for us to connect with one another. So long story short, started it because I was feeling lonely. So I put up like this Instagram post of, hey, is anybody interested in doing a multimedia like research project with me to talk about mental health and Asian identity? And then it started as an Instagram account where I would post my findings and talking to, I think I talked to like 60 plus people in that first like couple of months of research of like what everybody went through. And everybody had very different like familial backgrounds and ethnic backgrounds and cultural backgrounds within the Pan-Asian sort of identity. But we all experience like self-loathing, high stress, anxiety, like performance anxiety and things like that. So I was like, wow, this is a very real like web of issues that we all connect with and can all seek help for. So how do I make that more accessible for folks who are going through these sort of same things? So fast forward to the pandemic hitting, and I was just sort of doing content at that point. But then when the pandemic hit, it really turned inward and we needed a place to gather. Like there was so much anti-Asian racism going on, greater social movements, systemic racism popping up, police brutality, and on top of the COVID-19 pandemic came a need to sort of reflect amongst community in a virtual and safe space. So we started these sessions called Stay and Check-In. And those have been going strong ever since. We still have those every Wednesday. It was just a place for us as Asian folks to connect and be with each other. It didn't matter where you were in the world. If you signed on here, then we could talk about what it was like to be Asian in this space and learn from one another as well as mental health professionals. And that sort of kickstarted the community events that we host now and other affinity groups that we host and other sort of services, because we were able to talk with more folks in the community to be able to create more resources for the community as well. My vision for Asian Mental Health Project is always that it would be something that's owned by the community and the tools could be essentially templatized and so that folks could be able to create their own resources and community care as well.
Ooh, that's so good. Can I tell you a random story?
Oh yeah, love a random story.
So I was in grad school when the pandemic hit. And I was an intern for a nonprofit. And my mentor, Brandon Shindo, who you probably know,
yeah,
tells me, yeah, he goes, hey, you're really media oriented. You should get to know this girl that I met through the grapevine. Her name is Carrie. There's something really incredible about her. And so mind you, I hadn't even started working for Yellow Chair. I already knew who you were. And then I get a job offer to work for Yellow Chair, and the first event they invite me to is the Entwine and Asian Mental Health Project combo. And at this point, I'm already following you on Instagram. I'm inspired by you. And this is when you took your European vacation and I think in that Instagram post I read when I first started following you, you talked about how you had never really embraced your power as an Asian woman, and you were just beginning to travel at the time. And I think this was just like the birth of Asian Mental Health Project coming into in-person events. And so as someone that was mobilizing the community and had this vision of templatizing community care to the point where all of us can engage as a community, what was it like for you to be traveling, to found this like nonprofit, be hosting all of these events at the same time? I mean, you're one human. How do you do all of that? I'm sure you get this question all the time.
One, I value community very, very much, and I value work a lot. Whether or not that's good, I don't know. I understand that I am susceptible to burnout, but I also understand that I worked a lot on rest and a lot on what I need to do to balance everything. I've been able to incorporate more self-care related things into these cycles that I go through. But at the end of the day, I really do like to produce things. I really love organizing. And it's just really where I hit that flow state, I think is what it's called. It's like when I'm organizing in-person events, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing at that moment. If it's something that could serve my community or people that I love, it's something that I'd 100% want to do and put my all into it. But what I'm working on now is adding myself into the equation. I was listening to this podcast. I think it's called the Inner Child Podcast. It's super good. And it was like how to combat people pleasing tendencies. I'm butchering what the title is called. But for a long time, I was like, oh my God, people often ask me how I do it, or ask me, are you going to stop? Are you going to rest? And I am. I do want to rest. I do want to insert myself and go travel or just rest and be around myself for like several days at a time. But my heart feels a lot lighter when I can do these things, but also know I can get things done. So rather than omitting the things I feel like I need to do out of the equation, I'm going to add myself into the equation, is what the Inner Child Podcast said. For people who are people pleasers, and maybe I'm doing a lot of this because of my people pleasing tendencies, but at the same time, I also feel I don't want to stop doing this if I have the tools, resources, and energy to do it. But I do need to be mindful of my own self-care. One of my favorite quotes is by Audre Lorde, and it's, self-care is not selfish. It is an act of self-preservation, and that in itself is political warfare. It's something that I really live by, of like, I want to do all these things to activate for the community And I want to add myself into the equation and rest. And that's the balance that I'm figuring out now with all the things that I want to do. And another thing is I am not alone in doing this. One of the things that I've had to grapple with or understand is if I suddenly stop doing this for whatever reason, I feel comforted that it's going to continue. I'm not needed in this process. The community fuels me and motivates me. And there's so many folks like yourself who are doing this amazing work who will carry on this movement. And I feel so held by the community. And I need to let myself be helped by the community more, whether that is with my immediate team, who are amazing. They all take on so many of the amazing tasks and ideation of all the things that we do. And I feel I can truly just watch this magic happen as well as be a part of it. One thing I'm working on is letting myself be held by the community, because the truth is the world will keep turning. This change will happen. It's about, for me, having faith in the community and contributing what I can, but also adding myself into that equation and that pot as well. So yeah, sorry. Whew, that's a really good question. Got me thinking a lot.
No, I mean, like, first of all, I want to commend you for your lack of self-importance in the process, because being a creative myself is that there's this belief that I struggle with, okay, if I let go of control, what's going to happen? And it sounds like in the 4 years that you've been doing this, you've gotten to a place where you can say, what, maybe I'm really not that important, but I have to ask myself, is this something that I want to keep doing for decades, years to come? Can you unpack that for me? I want to serve the community, but I'm also held by the community. What does that mean to you, Carrie?
Yeah, I think in the simplest way possible, I realize I have the power to carve out what I do with the life that I have. And I know I love my community, my people, animals, the earth, all the things, my family. And I know I have the capacity to care for these people or these elements of my life, if I have the capacity to care for it and the capacity to serve. But at the same time, I know I wasn't just born with this capacity. And I know that I exist because of the folks that existed before me, the folks that exist now, my friends, my community, ancestors, family, sort of the same sorts of people that I want to hold. They already inherently hold me in who I am. Sometimes I feel like I think there is that sort of founder mentality. It's something that never really resonated with me of like, I need to do this because whenever I tried to align with that, it always just put a lot of pressure on me. And I was like, whoa, I don't like that. But something I'm working on is allowing myself to be held by all of these different forces, whether it's people or the earth or places, to be able to just be a human being in this space. But as a human being, I am taking on the responsibility, or I want to take on the responsibility of serving my community and those around me as best as I can. It's always a balance. Like I say this now, but it can be really hard. There was actually a reckoning that I had a couple of months ago where I was like, oh my God, like I have to do this. I have to do all these things in the day. At my worst, I feel so anxious and I feel like I'm obligated to do all these things. And then I was asked the question. It was like, are you holding on resentment to these things because you yourself are making you feel like you have to do all these things? So, and that's boiling into resentment, internalized resentment against my work and things like that. And I was like, oh my God, like I don't want to resent my work. But it really, like, where does that all come from? What I'm working on now is reframing it to, this is what I can do and this is what I want to do, but also setting the boundary of like, what if I don't want to do this? That's okay. The world will still turn and grass will keep growing, things like that. And it's going to be okay. It is the relinquishing control of things. Yeah. And I think there are just so many things that happen in life that we didn't plan. And yet it happens. So we have to kind of go with the way the wind blows, I guess. Yeah.
Carrie, there's so much gold with what you just said. And I don't want people that are listening or watching to miss it. You said, I don't subscribe to the founder mentality. It kind of doesn't equate with who I am as a person. And the second thing that you said was, I'm already living in community. And so why not allow myself to be held by community? And I think what a lot of people get wrong is they carry around this belief that they have to be something that they're not. Like, I was just talking to someone about this the other day. Like, when we set this expectation to be compassionate, we make it a goal rather than planting the seed of compassion, where you already are that person. You just have to water the seed so that you can grow. And like, I can tell that you're somebody that has already lived out so much work and mental health, like work on herself, to be able to say, like, the world will keep turning on without me, but I'm going to live in my purpose because that's my passion and that's like what I subscribe to. And so what I know that there's a story behind that. I know that like you getting to that place was not like, I woke up and I wished for it and it happened. How did you get to that place? Like, what was the messy middle to getting to a place where you went, I'm just going to be in service to this. I'm going to let it happen through me and for me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I love the phrase messy middle. That's awesome, because I feel like we're always in a messy middle. It's like nothing is as clean cut as it seems. And I appreciate like leaning in, like unpacking that mess, because that is so important. I think this is something that I've struggled with for many years. I think since college. Let's sort of I'll dive back in the first time I ever thought about, holy crap, I don't have a purpose like on this earth. Like, I am surrounded by all of these people who are very passionate about, like, I want to be a doctor, a veterinarian, a musician, an actor. This is my goal. This is like my passion. This is my purpose. I was like, oh my God, I don't have the fire. Like, I don't feel particularly passionate about one craft or like one thing to do. Therefore, I must not have purpose, or I'm not really good at like anything in particular. I'm okay at a bunch of things. Like, I can learn anything kind of to an extent, but I didn't feel like, I felt very, like jack of all trades, master of none, better than a master of one. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that whole thing, but I did feel the first part of like jack of all trades, master of none, kind of thing.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah, of course.
People say that because they don't know your power. Like, I didn't know that I could get paid to just ask people questions. Like, I didn't know
yeah,
that was
true.
I didn't know I could get paid for that. But like, for you, like, your strength was identifying the golden people to organize that and to like cultivate a team almost of people. I just wanted to pause and say, like, you did have a superpower. It was just like untapped.
What's
that movie with superheroes and they go to high school?
I love Skyline.
So the sidekicks were actually the real heroes. And I mean,
yes. I always resonated with that glowing man, where he's like up a glow stick.
No, you don't.
I'm a glow stick, but in the end he like lights the way for people. Yeah, again, like tapping into that and realizing not a purpose doesn't look the same for every person, and we can make our own purpose and meaning out of life. Like, I don't have to subscribe to any one vision of what somebody's purpose is. I can make that for myself. And that's honestly something I've like learned very, very, very recently. I remember I was having this big existential crisis with my therapist during COVID. Yeah. There was a book of like, it was like, I was having this like moment of like, oh my God, I'm like not worth a thing. And that's fine. Like, it's good. I'm just a speck of dust. This is great. Like, there's oddly freeing about that. But then I saw this book at the corner of my eye, like in my mom's bookshelf. It was like, it's called like, What Is Your Purpose? It was something like that. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. And I was like, this is some weird spiritual stuff coming in, or it's just a coincidence and that's wild. I can make the meaning out of it. But then in recent years, I really stepped into like, okay, this is what I like to do. This is what I'm good at. And maybe because of that, and because I've seen this thing, this Asian Mental Health Project, or I've seen it grow, maybe that is my purpose, is not just putting it just in the organization. But I mean, as mentioned, I do work in public policy and I like to do a variety of other things, art, music and stuff. And maybe it's just stuff that I like to do and explore. And I will keep doing it because it makes me feel purposeful. And I find purpose in that, even though I'm still carving out what that means to me.
I had no idea that you were still struggling with purpose. That's really refreshing because from the outside, let me tell you this, that's refreshing for me to hear. Because from the outside, it's like, oh, here is someone that's so talented in community care who really loves what she does. Like, okay, the first event I ever went to was the Entwine AMHP event. The second event I went to was Everything Everywhere All at Once. Mm-hmm. It's the queer social club that you collaborated with. Mm-hmm. And I think I was hosting a booth for Yellow Chair at that time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's a magic to the way that you organize community, because it's like there are always tears. There are always people that walk away going, oh my gosh, I got this person's number. There's always food, which is important. Mm-hmm. You're so good at it. And so what am I missing here? What do you think people don't see in your experience as someone that's founded this nonprofit? Because what I see is so much success and so much purpose. But what do you think you're still searching for in this journey that you're on?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Thank you so much for that. That means a lot to me. And it's always nice to be affirmed that these events mean things to people, because I'm like, I feel like it would have been really nice if I had this at some point. So that's how it all happens. I don't know what I'm searching for. I'm searching for a way to make this sustainable. I think that's one thing. I realize this is what I like to do and this is what I want to do. But in this, call it capitalist society, I want to be able to pay my bills, but also be able to like live a happy, fulfilling life in the ways that I need. I need to make this sustainable, and I'm not sure how to do that yet. I can see it'll come, I'm sure. I'm always a little bit concerned about money and things like that. But I do want, what I'm searching for is a way to make it sustainable and continue all of my art events. I hope to be free or very, very low cost in the future. Right now, they're all free. And I want to continue that because I think it's important to me that mental health care, community care is as accessible as possible. And that means it's free, like for me, for Asian mental health project, at least. Or again, low cost, sliding scale, whatever it is, something that people can come to as they are, no matter what situation anyone may be in. That is the core purpose of these events. And again, to the empowerment question of what does empowering mean? It means that I had the access and tools to be able to make this decision to better my mental health. And how do we as an organization make it easier for folks to access that? So yeah, making it sustainable and keeping it free. I know that's very logistical, but that is what I'm searching for now.
There's so many things I'm learning from founders. Like I just talked to this podcast season, I'm talking to a lot of women founders. And a lot of the time, I think there's a stress behind the work that you do because you are carrying a lot of weight of like you're working full time. And then you also have this project that you're deeply passionate about, but you also want to travel and live a good life. And so I'm really grateful that you're not pretending like you're perfect. Thank you so much for that. Because
of course.
Like this is a conversation we need to hear. Carrie Zhang, just because she has this, you know, project that's bringing people together doesn't mean that she's not human. And so when you find yourself in these moments where you're tired and you're exhausted, and May was Mental Health Awareness Month and Asian Mental Health Awareness Month, how did you or how do you take care of yourself after such a busy season?
The one part of self-care is checking in on myself, like, how am I actually feeling? Like when you care for another person, the first thing you ask is, you don't just dive in and like, give them, well, maybe you do, but like when you're asking somebody what you could do for somebody, the first thing you do is like ask how they're feeling and things like that. So the first thing I do for self-care is like ask myself, what do I need? How am I feeling? And this is something I'm trying to incorporate more. I think after a busy month, there is still a lot of like strain and guilt associated with that for me. Similar to that, really? I'm not perfect. I just feel like when things are really busy, one thing I'm so scared of, and again, this is me being like pretty vulnerable. One thing I'm really scared of is like, I'm going to be one of those very busy people, eventually parent, that just neglects all things and just works all the time. Cause that's how I felt in like May. I was like just constantly on and constantly working. And I was like, oh my God, I'm neglecting my personal relationship. So I think one piece of self-care is like forgiving myself for that and being like, it's okay to have done X, Y, and Z things to be able to do the work that you need to do. And two, really intentionally resting or doing something fun, both. So like whether it's I needed to nap like for every day, like in the middle of the day for a week or so, or I wanted to go be outside in nature and connect with the outdoors so that I could feel more present in myself. It's something I struggle with a lot when I am working, because I recognize that when I work a lot, it is to somewhat avoid the presence that I have. So I want to be able to engage with that. So I do schedule in weeks of rest for Asian Mental Health Project. We've had several like Wednesdays. Again, they're supposed to be weekly wellness check-ins, but we've had several Wednesdays off because I'm like, I don't know if I can do this today. And that's okay. But still remaining, creating a place for a consistent relationship with mental health, I think is important, whether that's for the community or for myself. Like Asian Mental Health Project will be there. It is, the world keeps turning and I can take a break and come back to it. And allowing myself to do that is like the biggest form of self-care, I think. Yeah.
But I think also a deeper level to what you're saying too is you have to have a level of honesty and self-awareness around when you're getting weak. I'm relieved that you said that, that a part of you is afraid that you'll eventually become this like busy parent that doesn't have any time for her children, because I felt that way as well. Just like being on, being on constantly as a therapist for that month. But like part of what you said is you have to be willing to say, I am tired, because that's where the healing begins, right? Like you began to understand the need for naps and rest and nature to recharge and to reset. Has that always been the story of like being able to express honesty about that? Like, hey, I'm actually not doing well. Or is there a journey that you had to take?
I think it's still like constantly a journey. I'm always like, I can do it. It always takes me back to when I was a kid and I wanted to carry like as many chairs as humanly possible across the auditorium to show that I could do it. But really, I just like was hurting my own back and like dropped it step by toe, stuff like that.
I was that.
That's what it. Yes, I was that kid too. And I was like, oh, so annoying. No, but I was that child, and I am still that kid where I'm like, I can do it. I can hold all of these chairs on my own. When it's like, hey, actually, there's like five other kids who can and want to help as well. And so let yourself be helped by community and let the community hold you. It's a constant reminder. I think I have to tell myself this every day / every week. And even now, voicing it out helps me validate that it's okay to relinquish some work and control and all that. It's still like a constant, it's a bit of a constant struggle, but there's certainly progress there. So it's good.
Who in your life do you feel like you can be vulnerable with and will position you back into who you were made to be?
I have a really great, loving, supportive group of friends, best friend, partner. I think they're all just, I really love the term chosen family. And I think they were my chosen family in ways. There's still ways that one of the things I do struggle with is I don't feel 100% fully connected to folks, but I don't think anyone does all the time. But part of that is also just validating my own self and authenticity and being okay with just being myself no matter who it is in a safe context. But I feel really appreciative that I do have friends, partner, family, or friends and partner that would be able to hold me when I am in that messy middle, I think is what that is there. Yeah.
Can I ask you a follow-up question with that?
Of course. Yes.
So with your closest friends, with your partner, with your chosen family, what characteristics do you see as a through line that they all have in common? Because what I notice for me is I really look for people that can be honest with me when they see a difference in my personality or when they notice that I'm working too hard. It's what I love about the yellow chair culture. It's what I love about my family. My parents are able to tell me that, my sister, my best friend. Mm-hmm. What are some characteristics that you look for with your chosen family? Because I feel like people can really learn from that.
Yeah, I think characteristics I look for is supportiveness and patience, I think. I like to say affirmation and validation is very important to me of like, hey, don't worry, you're on the right track, you're okay. But I don't know if that's how I actually like to be supportive or if it's because I'm constantly somebody who values external validation perhaps more than I would like to. So I'm working on that. I feel supported when I can come to folks just as I am without any judgment or fear of feeling unsafe and things like that. I think my friends are really wonderful. There's that stability and consistency, I think really matters to me too. Life is wild. There's so many ups and downs, but we're all still on track and recognizing that mutually and showing up for one another. I think showing up is really important to me, making the conscious effort to have conversation and to see each other and to spend quality time with one another, really tapping into those love languages too.
I love that. So a good friend is supportive, they're fun, and they show up for you in moments where you just need support, where it doesn't have to be this like big elaborate thing.
Yeah. And that's how I hope and want to be too. So yeah.
Yeah. Is that where you started to learn the importance of community? Because I know that post-college and college were really hard moments for you where you started to reevaluate whether or not you wanted to do anything. And so how did friendship push you through?
It's a bit of unconditional love. And I struggle with that word a little bit, but unconditional love is not love without boundaries. Unconditional love is, hey, I see you at your worst and I love you anyway. That's what my friends showed to me. It was the I love you anyway. Here are some things that I see that you may need support with. They'd call me out on my shit. and they really are there because they love me and they have helped me at the worst times. And that is something that I truly cherish.
I think that friendship post-pandemic is something that I'm realizing is really a cornerstone in doing the community work we're doing for the Asian American community, especially in Los Angeles, where we're the epitome of storytelling, but we're also the epitome of look at me, look at me, where I don't know if you feel this, but like whenever I exit LA, there's almost like a freedom to not have to look good all the time. And so there's something so beautiful about being seen and embraced for who you really are as a human, where I'm curious, Carrie, because AMHP, Asian Mental Health Project, has grown post-pandemic, how has your relationship to community changed over the years? I feel like it's made people reevaluate the necessity for community, but I'm curious of what your journey has looked like.
I remember thinking last year, I joined a run club and I was like, oh my God, I've socialized more in these last 6 months of joining this run club than I have ever in my whole freaking life. I've met so many people every week and we're all like hanging out all the time. And I'm like, it was so nice. I think just in like the nonprofit space, I think, I don't know the exact number, but it's something like the number of nonprofits 3x'd in the last several years because of COVID. I could be wrong. And that was really cool because it's like the need for community is so strong. And then it's like, oh, we can build one. Like we as humans, we as people rally together and organize when things are going wrong. And in our hardest time, we have each other, we can hold each other. And that's when we really have to show up for each other. And I'm hoping that can carry on more and more and not just showing up for each other again for the vanity of things. Cause I think in LA, like there's the pressure to like look cute, make everything into content, things like that, which is so much fun. I like to do it sometimes, but that cannot be our sole driver. It can't be our sole driver of why we want to do things. I think it gives an extra oomph sometimes to push things out. But what is the real human connection that we're creating with these experiences? And is it something that we want to dedicate our time to? And that anybody has the power to build community.
Yeah, I want to end today's conversation by just acknowledging just the genius and the simplicity behind how you navigate things. Because for someone who's listening that knows nothing about community organizing, it could have been easy for them to bypass the way that you thought about how to create community within a space where people felt lonely, where I found it so interesting that the way that your mind works is you join a place and you go, how can I create space? How can I invite more people in so that this becomes an accessible place? I just love how you are able to do that. You're an extremely generous and giving person. And so thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, thank you so much for having me and for allowing me the space to share.